But we are here with John and Joe Beth Ladd. They, of course, are the ranchers we talked to last year. They are from Arizona. John, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Well, I was hoping you could give us a little update. Now, where exactly is your property in relationship to the border?
Our south fence is the border.
Right. Yeah.
And that's, we have about 10.5 miles of the border is it. From we're in the southeast corner of the state, Mexico, New Mexico, and then Arizona.
You know, Arizona is just right in the middle of things. Now, last year you were telling us how bad the things were. It was they were coming through the fence. I mean, there really was a fence, but it was always being destroyed. Correct.
Right. Right.
How are things going this year?
Well, the biggest thing is that Martha McSally got elected as she's our congresswoman now.
Okay.
And she's on the Homeland Security Committee out of the House of Representatives, and she brought 23 delegates from Washington down and showed them what was going on. All of a sudden, we got more assets on the border, more Border Patrol are patrolling, and cameras and radar, and so we got very few people coming across our ranch, but we still have two or three loads of dope a week coming through, mules, backpackers.
Wow. So that just, what does that do? That just shows us that if we put enough emphasis on it, that we can control our border.
Right. That's exactly right. And she, Michael McCall is out of Texas, and he understands what's going on. And being on that committee, they could put the pressure on Homeland Security to do something. So they did.
You know, one of my questions to you would be, Donald Trump says he's going to build the big wall. What do you think?
Well, if you patrol the border properly, you don't need a wall. But I like Trump's comment on that, but I don't know if he literally means building a wall. But we have one.
You have one.
And it doesn't work if you don't patrol it.
How tall is the wall, just out of curiosity?
Well, part of it on us is 10 feet, and the big wall is 13 feet, and then a little bit of west of us is 18 feet. And,
I think they're talking about putting an 18-foot fence around the White House.
Yeah,
we've heard that. Yeah. How's that make you feel? It's supposed to be the people's house, right?
Right.
And they're talking about putting an 18-foot. What do you think, Joe Beth?
Well, President Obama made the remark about, you know, they want us to build a wall, you know, next they'll want a moat and we'll put alligators in it, you know, and he was being sarcastic, I know, but now all of a sudden they find out that, you know, people can jump over that little wall that they have, or fence, it's not really a wall that they have around the White House, so, oh, well, let's build a big wall around the White House. It's the same thing with the Pope saying that they don't need a wall, and yet, you know, the Vatican has this huge wall around it. We have a wall of fence, and it needs to be patrolled to be effective.
Sure.
It stops deer and wildlife from coming across, but...
Well, you know, here's my thing on the wall around the White House. If the Secret Service had done their job the first time...
Right.
You know, if somebody had paid a price or been, you know, something disastrous happened to them, would they be even talking about spending, $18 million or billion dollars, whatever it is, to build this wall? No.
Nope.
Because people would not pass it. Well, that goes to the same thing on the wall on our border.
You're right.
Yeah.
A lot of wasted money, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But things are better, and your analogy is exactly right. If somebody has a will and some accountability, it could be fixed overnight. But I don't think most of our politicians want to change anything that's going on right now. There's the border's about smuggling now. It isn't about immigration. It's about smuggling and making money. So.
Well, speaking of that, you're saying how many people come across with drugs all the time?
We get at least two loads a week, and that it's we call them mules. They have a back bundle that's about 50 pounds and a front bundle that's about 20 pounds, so they each one of them carries 70 pounds at a time. And, you know, anywhere from 3 to 6 people, and they make 3 round trips. And then when they get enough bundles down at the highway, then the car or truck comes in, they throw them in the back truck, and off they go.
And you see this?
Yeah, yeah. It it's been going on forever. And, you know, Border Patrol could, they could, they're doing better.
They could shoot them.
But, yeah.
Wow,
but
yeah.
They, if, you know, Border Patrol has a lot of restrictions on what they can and can't do.
Well, that's my point.
Yeah.
Yes, they don't have the power, and that's the same thing if you talk about the White House.
Sure.
If people would take the time to do their job, the Secret Service is supposed to be the top in our nation.
Yeah.
And they have been asleep at the switch how many times? So many
right.
times. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it absolutely. Well, that's the same analogy, and it the administrations over the years, Obama has done a lot of his rhetoric and affirmative action stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It has done more damage than the other ones not doing anything, and Homeland Security has also hamstrung Border Patrol because it's politically not correct anymore. These are just poor people coming in, and that's not true. That all the poor people that are coming in to save themselves are here. These people now are druggers, they're professionals, and they're going to take advantage of everything that they can in this country.
Now, where exactly do you live in Arizona?
We're in between NACO, Arizona, and the San Pedro River, which is a little bit south of Bisbee, Arizona.
Okay.
And we're right in the southeast corner, basically.
Now, how does that affect the town, the towns that you live in, just the people that are coming in and going through? How does that affect the whole economy there?
Well, Bisbee was a mining town that the mines have been shut down for 40 years, but the...
Do they have any tunnels? I'm sorry, I know, we're talking about mining, that, you know, and we've heard about all the tunnels and everything. Do they have any tunnels that are tunneling through underground?
They just found one that was 967 feet long that came from Mexico.
For real?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Was it a mining tunnel?
Well, it was well built. It had ventilation, electricity, hydraulic door.
Did you get to see it?
I did. You got to see it? Yeah. Yeah, and that is one of the longest tunnels in our area, you know, 900 and some feet long.
How does this happen? How do they get to do this?
I mean, we talked about, what do they do with all the dirt? Doesn't somebody notice all the dirt?
Right.
Well,
and Nogales, which is farther west, they're finding tunnels there all the time. I'm surprised Nogales isn't a big stinkhole because they find so many tunnels.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
What did they mine there?
It was copper.
Copper?
Right.
Yes. Wow. Well, I just find it hard to believe that these tunnels, and now you're talking about mining, so of course they were digging. So, and nobody's noticed any amount of dirt being moved to
no.
a different
right.
area.
It was about the entrance on the tunnel on the U.S. side was about 200 yards from one of the Border Patrol surveillance cameras, an 85-foot camera that looked right down in there. And then our local police department is one that they had a load of marijuana in a U-Haul truck. And something happened, then Bisbee cops decided to pull the truck over. And so the kid that had the dope in the truck, he tried to make a deal. And he said, well, I'll tell you where I got all this dope from if you let me go or whatever. So he brings back the biggest tunnel we ever had down in Cochise County. So, and then Border Patrol is like, wow. This is happening, yeah.
This is really happening right here on our border.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but that,
the Border Patrol aren't smoking anything.
No.
Okay.
No.
I mean, I'm just checking here.
I know. Have a weekly test for them.
A weekly test?
Anyway, there's a lot of irony to the story, but, Border Patrol is trying, but our government has put a lot of restrictions on them. And, you know, it isn't going to work. The way it is now.
So the drug issue is still the big issue,
right.
Even though there are not as many, as many people just coming across the border.
That's right. The issue with the drugs is those guys, that's their profession. They're not going to get stopped. They're not going to get caught. And so if and all the ranchers and the people that live in the rural communities, they know. You know, you got to be aware. Don't put yourself in a bad spot with these druggers.
Right. Sure.
But, you know, something could happen, you just stumble on them or whatever. But that's the issue, is it's a regular event, and nobody's been able to stop it because there's not a will to it. And
people are afraid.
Sure.
I mean, I would be afraid living in that situation.
Well,
and if you had a family or children, you know, you would be worried about that too.
Yep.
Right.
So. Our inadequacies with the federal government, but our sheriff, we just got walkie-talkies a couple of weeks ago that we're able to communicate with the sheriff's office. We got terrible cell phone reception down there. So we've been working for 2 years, and they finally got it worked out. We got all shortwave radios now.
And so what we use those for, just to say that there's a problem
right.
in your backyard?
Right. Right, we'll be able to talk. You know, we all have landlines, but most of the time we're on the ranch, and so you can't get out on your cell phone. So then you either have to wait till you get home, or go out to the highway, or do something. But now with these radios, you'll be able to do it right now and let them know you got a problem, or I got a problem.
And how quick a response will you get from them? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I would think you'd get somebody there within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
As quick as they can, you know.
Yeah.
If you're really far away, it might take.
But that's our, you know, we're the positive developments is, you know, we have a representative that's doing something, but then our sheriff department, and they, you know, they work with Border Patrol a little bit, but this first program in the country where you can talk on a two-way radio, and so we've got good people locally that are trying to fix this.
Now, how far is your county? I mean, how far does this go as far as, is this within your county? Is it the next county over? Is there different issues for them?
Well, if you go east of Cochise County, you get into New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a huge problem over there. That there's a girl here from that county, Erica Valdez, is here today, or this, for fair.
Yeah.
If you go west of us, you get into Santa Cruz County, which is Nogales. And they're going to slough off into a big tunnel at the port of entry. You go further west of that, you got the Tohoto Indian Reservation, which is out of control. And then the next one over is Yuma. And they're starting to have problems again. But, you know, the whole border on Arizona has got different issues, but most of it's all just drug-related. And the number of illegals aren't as prevalent as they used to be. So
it's not as prevalent.
That's right. They're kind of.
Do you think the economy has anything to do with that?
Well, maybe a little bit. And, you know, sarcastically, I said, well, they're all here. So that's why it's slowed down.
There's nobody else that wants
right.
to come in, right? They've all come across.
Right. And, you know, get somebody says, oh, no, there's another generation ready to come. But I think Texas, we had no issues with the juveniles
mm-hmm.
that Texas is putting
right.
up with. And I don't know if that has something to do with no people coming through Arizona, or I don't know. But and we're glad that there's fewer people coming, but the drug deal has been increasing pretty significantly over the last 5 years.
Well, unfortunately, the drug issue is affecting our whole country, because
yep.
the drugs come from where they come from, Arizona yep. or Texas or wherever, then they end up in South Carolina, and
yeah.
I mean, and that's
everywhere.
Where mm-hmm. that's the issues that we're really facing, is what are we going to do about the drugs, and there just doesn't seem to be a way to stop it.
Well, and we've talked about consequences being the most effective way to stop the border. And, well, it's going to cost money to put them in jail and to have an attorney in it. Well, so what are we going to do? People can spend a lot of money on drugs,
right?
But we can't spend a lot of money on prosecuting the people that bring the drugs.
Well, not only that, it destroys their lives.
Sure.
I mean, we're destroying people's right. lives. And we're, you know, we just had an incident where somebody in our community just died from overdose of drugs. And it just affects not only that family, but the whole community.
Sure.
It's just.
Right.
And we don't seem to be getting ahead of it.
No. Well, we have a monthly meeting, a stakeholder meeting with landowners with the Border Patrol. And apparently heroin is, the cost is comparable to marijuana now, because
yeah.
it's so easy to get and so much of it.
Yeah.
And that's unbelievable to me, that we got a hard drug that now it's recreational because it's cheap.
Yeah.
And it'll kill you.
It will. But let's see, I understand you're part of the Border Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you got to tell me a little bit about that. Are you a Border Cowboy? Joe Beth, what's your role in this?
He's involved. I'm not really involved with that.
Oh, come on, Joe Beth, you'd be good.
She's the mastermind behind it.
A couple of slingshooter, ready to go, Border Cowboys. How's that going for you?
Well, it...
you get to play yourself.
Yes. I like that. Absolutely.
You don't have to be somebody else,
right,
you know,
yeah.
Or a John Ladd playing.
Yeah, no makeup either.
No makeup either?
Right.
Okay. No, I've never seen the show.
Well, it's a reality show, and the one thing that this border issues, multi-generational ranchers, and we've known each other all our life, but we'd used to see each other once or twice a year. Now we see each other twice a month, going to a meeting or something.
Is it staged?
No,
staged? Come on now.
It's still in the pilot stage. I don't think they've actually
had it on the air.
It on the air.
So far,
Be truthful. You're on with me, WCRS.
You bet. Well, we've given a testimony a little bit, and then he's filmed a little bit of Roundup. And everything that I understand about the future of it, and there was going to be six different ranches.
Mm-hmm.
They'd come out two or three days a week and just film you doing whatever
doing
you're doing.
Doing
and
your
I
stuff.
Said, well, it's going to be awful boring. But apparently people want to see it.
Yeah.
So, but there's nothing staged. There's nothing scripted. They're just going to sit in the truck or watch you brand or fix a fence or whatever. There's a little pilot or what do they call it, sizzle reel.
Sizzle reel, okay.
And
they took all the good stuff that happened and stuck it into one little thing, right? Yeah, okay.
And then there is some positive development for some sponsors.
Yeah.
That was one of the biggest things. No, nobody really came up with a lot of money to sponsor it.
Sure.
But, I...
How do you like being called a border cowboy?
Well...
It reminds me of Gunsmoke. You know, remember the Gunsmoke, when they used to come?
Yeah. Well, that'd be all right.
You polished up your silver holster
I get
everything.
That all. That was a big thing when we all agreed to do it. They said, no staging, and if we don't like what you're going to do, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll see what happens.
Had they caught, I'll use the word, caught anything on film that showed things happening or, for the sizzle reel that they've done?
It isn't on the sizzle reel, but they decided they better hold off on that. But they did get some footage of some mules east of Douglas. And I think that could have been some of the issue that not getting as fast going as we did because it slowed down.
Yeah.
And, we sit every morning and watch out of our kitchen window and groups of people coming across. And we haven't seen that for 2 years at least.
Well, from that standpoint, that's a good thing. And how's the price of beef out there? I think it's pretty high where I'm from.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, we don't get what the grocery store is.
It's down a little bit from what it was last year.
Yeah.
But it's still good.
Still good.
It doesn't matter. We're going to keep raising cows no matter what. So.
Now, do you have any children?
We have three boys.
And do they work with you on the ranch? Or?
Yeah, they don't live on the ranch. They have jobs in town, but they're all involved in it. We've got two grandsons. So we've got sixth generation coming up.
Wow.
So they're going to do it. I don't see any issues with continuing the ranch and we survived the border issue, and I hope it doesn't ever come back like it was, but it isn't fun to live with that.
So, Beth, was there ever a time when it wasn't like that on the people coming across the border, since you've been involved or since you've been part?
We lived in Phoenix for a while after we got married, and we moved down 25 years ago, and maybe the first year or two we lived there, it wasn't as bad, but it, you know, it was really bad after, even just after a year or two when we lived there. They Border Patrol was stopping us.
Well,
they used to stop our oldest son, you know, when he was first started driving. They would stop him coming home. You know, they would, and then they would say the kind of car he was driving was the type of car a drug runner would drive, you know, and he drove an old car.
Right.
It was ridiculous. We had a lot of problems with that kind of thing.
But in truth, you would rather have had that type of problem than to have people just coming across
the
border.
Well, no, they were stopping us because, you know, they thought we were taking people or drugs. But we still had all the people coming across.
Right. Okay.
It just, I mean, he's not kidding when he said, we would sit in our kitchen, at our, you know, kitchen table, and you could look out the window, and here would be a group of 4 or 5 people every day. It was unbelievable.
In broad daylight.
In broad daylight. I've had, one day I was sitting in the house and I saw, and he was probably a drug runner or a people smuggler, and he's on his cell phone walking across and as if I had a sidewalk in front of my yard, you know, and we don't live in town, obviously, just strolling across the yard, talking on his cell phone. I was just flabbergasted. I thought,
no privacy.
It was, you know, we've had them knock on our door and ask to call Border Patrol because they got separated from their group and they want to ride back home so they can try again the next day.
Knock on
that
your door for a ride back to the other side.
Well, no, they want us to call Border Patrol. Border Patrol will take them back.
That's what I meant, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they feed them, give them water, take them back over, and then they'll try again in another day or two. So that has stopped, which is good. But the drugs have not. The drugs have gotten worse.
So it's the drug issue that really needs to be addressed in your area from the Arizona border.
The consequences for the ranch is the drug runners with having the packs on their back, they don't like to take them off to go through fences, so they just cut them. So all my fences on the trails of the drugs are cut, you know, twice a week. So then the cows are out. So they got to go back, find where it is, fix it, get the cows in, and then, you know.
Do the cows willingly say we'd rather be on your side of the fence than on the other?
They go,
talk to them about this.
Well, their philosophy is the grass is greener on the other side.
They don't care where they go as long as they're eating.
That's
right. Like my dog, Gracie. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. And but anyway, that's the issue without the safety issues and everything else dealing with the dopers. But cows getting out. And then if somebody hits a cow going 60 on the highway, they're probably going to get hurt or killed. And my cow's probably going to be dead too. But that it's just a huge issue, and it's every day. That's what I'm sick of, is spend 50% of my time checking stuff or fixing fence. And I'm tired of it.
What's the future of your ranch? I mean, you're not a young guy, John. I mean, you know, I know people can't see you, but, you know, we get the idea. What's the future of
them? I'm only 32.
Oh, my God, you've lived hard. No, what's the future of your ranch?
Our boys are all, they're going to take it
they're
over.
They're all in on it?
Yeah, yeah. So there isn't any problem there. And you know, one of my thoughts is the ranch has done good. And I said, well, I wonder how much better it could have done if we didn't have this immigration problem.
Sure. And how much money does it cost you every year to repair fences?
Not just money, the time involved
sure.
is.
Well, that's money. That's really money, too.
Yeah.
Your time, yeah.
University of Arizona, or in Tucson, big university there, they did a study, and if you ranch on the border, you're going to spend 30% more than a ranch 100 miles north. So, and I think that's pretty legitimate, 30% more.
Wow.
But anyway, we're here, and we're going to keep going.
Well, I tell you what, you know, I will be looking forward to border cowboys, John Ladd, playing himself. Right out there.
You got it.
You got it. Well, listen, you know, I sure appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this morning. I can't imagine living there. One question I would ask as we wind up here, why did you stay? Why did you stay?
That's all we have.
Yeah.
It's been in my family 120 years, and that's what I got, and I like it. So that's why we stayed.
Well, God bless you for doing it.
Okay.
And for keeping on, keeping on. I could say the same thing about why am I still in the jewelry business. I have no friggin' idea. I just keep doing it. Well, listen, JoBeth, anything that you could add here at the end as we wind this up? How are you feeling about things? The drugs, of course, is the big issue. And but how, from a woman's perspective, being a mom and now a grandma too, what are you thinking about?
Well,
this?
You know, I worry about our kids living there and our grandkids. They don't live on the ranch right now, but you do worry about, you know, when they're there, if they happen to come across a drug runner, you know, the safety issue is always there in your mind, but you can't just live thinking about it the entire time or you wouldn't have any kind of life. But it's a concern. Yeah, it's, you know, and you always hope that there will be a solution and someone will in Washington will decide that they need to stop all this. More than just one, it's going to take more than just one person deciding that. Because like John said, our Congresswoman, Martha McSally, has really done a lot to help with the issue. But it's going to take more than just her.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it needs that next step.
You bet.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll be sitting here next year, right underneath the Washington Monument right here,
right,
talking about this again, and maybe there'll be some more since you've had some good success in the last year.
Okay. Well, I sure hope so.
All right. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Well,
thanks
thank you for
us.
Keeping this going.
All right. We appreciate you.
Okay.
Hey, Andy, let's hear some words from our sponsors, and we'll be back, don't you? And how about some clips from the I Love Ann Show? We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
That's right. They tell me I'm live right here from Washington, D.C., and I haven't died yet. That's right. I am here with Joe Guzzardi. He is with the Californians for Population Stabilization. Now, that's a heck of a title.
It is a very complete title, but it reflects what our interest is in the link between unchecked illegal immigration and California's population growth. We're right now at nearly 40 million people. Almost 100% of that population growth has come through illegal immigration and children born to illegal immigrants. And State Department of Finance projects that by the year 2050, there could be 55 million Californians living in the state. So we're alarmed, and we're trying to do our best to make sure that the people have sensible choices when it comes to selecting their officials, especially on the issue of immigration.
Well, you know, Donald Trump is the presumptive Republican nominee.
So I've heard.
Yes, that's right. And if something doesn't happen at the convention, he will be the candidate. What does your group feel about Donald Trump as president?
Well, we applaud him for coming out and being the first politician in California, really since Pete Wilson 25 years ago. Governor, Governor Pete Wilson 25 years ago came out with Proposition 187 to come out and say, look, this is literally an invasion, not only of California, but of the United States, and it is a problem that needs to be addressed. So, of course, that triggered enormous rioting and protesting in California. I'm sure we'll see more of it. But the interesting thing is that that message is going to resonate with millions of voters, millions of California voters who have not shown up at the polls since Pete Wilson. There are millions of voters disgusted with illegal immigration, disgusted with the Hispanic-dominated state legislature, disgusted with Brown, disgusted with crime, disgusted with all of the entitlements, and they are waiting in the wings to have an opportunity to express that disgust.
Well, the turnout for the vote for Trump in the that was a pretty big turnout.
A big turnout.
For the primary.
A big turnout. You have heard, all of your listeners have heard, how the big rise in registrations has been among Latinos, but that's really not true. In fact, it's false. The biggest rise in registered voters in California has been among independent voters, and among those independent voters, more than 60% of them are likely to vote conservatively. This is a study that was done by the Public Policy Institute of California, a left-leaning think tank. So you're hearing one thing, but the reality is something quite different.
Okay. Now, one of the things I know we wanted to talk about, and one of the things that I keep hearing about that just blows my mind, is that we are having illegals able to vote. We have them getting driver's licenses, attorneys, doctors.
That's right.
How is this happening?
It happened the way that all of these entitlement bills happen. A bill was written up in the legislature, completely dominated by Hispanics.
Yeah, we're talking California.
We're talking California, right?
Right.
And it was signed by Jerry Brown. And the biggest noticeable development, almost instantaneously, was driver's licenses could now be issued to illegal immigrants. A bill that had been around for nearly 20 years and had never been able to get through the legislature. And when it did, it was vetoed by Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. That was the big thing. But also included in the fine print were licenses could be issued now to lawyers. They could be issued to accountants, to school teachers, and all of those other things. So in essence, in the one stroke of the pen, illegal immigrants could be on their way to getting professional licenses.
And, doesn't that blow our mind?
It does blow people's minds, but people aren't involved in the decision-making process, which gets us back to Trump in the sense that here's an opportunity. Okay, if you're really disgusted by all of these things and you think they are unfair, which clearly they are, then you can go out and vote for Donald Trump.
Now, just out of curiosity, I mean, we have a large Hispanic population in South Carolina, nowhere near what California has. But what are they? You were saying the numbers that are going to be there. Does that mean that the other population, the rest of us, are going to become outnumbered?
Eventually, that's what could happen. I mean, what you want to get is a common sense, sustainable immigration policy. So you get good immigrants who are ready to contribute. I mean, now there's a little bit of question about what that might be since there's so many Americans out of work and such great job shortages almost across the board. But in any case, not importing the least skilled, the least able to adapt to society, and the people who are going to most be burdensome on our welfare system. And that's what we've got. I mean, in California, and I'm sure in South Carolina too, there's all this talk about income inequality, and Governor Brown is going to end it, and President Obama wants to end it, and it'll die under Clinton. That's impossible for it to happen when literally thousands of poor, uneducated illegal immigrants come to the United States and to California and to South Carolina every single day.
So what's the answer, Joe?
Well, the answer would be a firm resolve to get illegal immigration ended and to put legal immigration under control. And I would suggest to that end two things. First, mandatory E-Verify. If you are in the United States working, you must be legally authorized to hold that job. And second, a return to the very effective internal enforcement that the legacy INS used to employ. They would send agents to the workplace, to other places where illegal immigrants might be congregated, and say, hey, let's see your paperwork. Now, you know, today that's considered like
Oh, my God, we wouldn't ask that question, you know.
What are you talking about? But
I can remember back in Greenwood, South Carolina, that they went to a facility there and rounded up a whole bunch and sent them back. The problem that ensued out of that, though, a lot of them had wives and children. Mm-hmm. They sent the men back, and the women were just left on the streets, and literally left on the street with their children. I mean, that was a horrible situation. They did send them back, but the women were out there. I mean, they had no choice. They were prostitutes. They had no way to support themselves.
I agree that that's terrible, and it should never happen, and it's awful for the women and probably for their husbands, too. But that story reinforces the importance of securing the border from the beginning.
Sure.
So if you did that at the beginning, then the guys wouldn't
they
have been able to come.
They were actually coming in with illegal papers.
Well,
there you go. They were
I think we now have technology in place that can detect the difference between legal and illegal paperwork.
The thing that happens now, they don't even check. They don't
come
into the workplace.
Right.
They would not do that now. But this was maybe, God, I'm going to say 10, 12 years ago maybe.
Yeah.
And from that standpoint. So if we could control the borders, you know, I heard the other day that President Obama's since he's been in office, something like 852,000. He's on par for bringing in 1 million people from the Middle East.
Yes, right.
I mean,
mostly,
huge,
predominantly Muslim refugees.
Right.
He's determined on that.
And so when we look at that, that's changing the whole, that's changing the culture, isn't that? Didn't we used to have percentages that used to come in and this type of thing into our country?
Right. There were allocations. But when you get a person in charge and who's clearly calling all of the shots on the border and all of the shots with the Justice Department about refugees and what you can do and what you can say, it's almost impossible to overcome that. It's doable. It's doable under a different administration. We could secure the border. We could enforce immigration laws in the interior, but it has to start at the White House.
Now, what about drugs in California? I was just talking to the lads here. They're in Arizona, and they were talking about the amount of drugs coming across the border.
Right. The meth capital of the United States is, by universal agreement, the San Joaquin Valley of California. That is where there are the most cookers of methamphetamines in the United States. And that, of course, is relatively close to the border. It's about, you know, 350 miles away from the border.
So in California, they have a huge drug problem, probably bigger than...
Well, the drugs that are cooked up in the San Joaquin Valley are distributed throughout California and the nation. It doesn't end in California.
Okay. And so is there any answer for our country? I mean, you know, I get actually depressed some days thinking about this, where we're going and what's going to happen to our country. I mean, you know, I don't have any children, but, you know, you worry about our country. And our lawmakers just don't seem to be standing up, particularly on the drug issue. I just was talking to the lads. They said it's better on the border as far as illegals coming across the border, but the drugs are still the main issue.
After following this issue for 30 years, the most encouraging thing that I can say to you and your listeners today is that there is much more awareness among the general public of what's going on. When I first moved back to California, and I would call my friends across the United States and say, hey, this is going on and that's going on vis-a-vis illegal immigration. And they would say, oh, well, you know, that's a California problem. We've got nothing to do with that. We're in South Carolina. And now when you talk about it, when you talk about illegal immigration, when you talk about the link between illegal immigration and drugs and prostitution and job loss and stuff, everybody knows about it.
So what do you think? I mean, you're a lobby group. You're trying to lobby. What are you seeing as far as Congress, as far as any willingness to do anything about it?
Like everybody, we are gravely disappointed in the current Congress. Their complete failure to stand up against Obama on any of the issues that they ran on. You know, they ran on, oh, yeah, we're going to defund Obama's amnesty, and we're going to defund Obamacare, and we're not going to let these refugees just come in. Complete disappointment on them. So try again. Try again in 2016 and try to get people that are going to keep their word.
Do you think Trump will keep his word?
Yeah.
Tough question right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, isn't
well,
that...
Well, right into it, that one, didn't it, you?
Isn't,
yeah,
isn't that the big question? Well, I believe that when Trump says, make America great again, he sincerely believes that. Now, I don't know
if
every little thing that he's talked about doing is doable, but I really believe that he has Americans' best interests at heart, and I do not believe that is true or ever has been true about the sitting president.
I agree. All right, we are here with Joe Guzzardi, and we certainly appreciate you taking time to sit down and talk to us here today.
Thanks so much for having me back. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. You have a great day. We are right here in Washington, D.C. at the beautiful Phoenix Park Hotel. We're going to, I think we're just in time to hear South Carolina radio news. That's going to, we'll be back. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos. So I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
All right, I'm here with Suzanne Shattuck. She is a well-informed American national security immigration. She is a nurse, and she has issues. How you doing, Suzanne?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me, actually. Thank
absolutely.
You so much.
Absolutely. We were talking, snagged Kevin over there. He was just doing some stuff for his show. He came around the corner. I spoke to him. You started talking. We had a conversation, and here we are.
There we go.
Now, what is your issue? You're a nurse, so why do you have issues with immigration?
Well, more specifically, refugee resettlement, which is a large form of immigration, and I had my eyes open to it, really, when I was nursing and realized that I was having to use translator phones at least on a daily basis for the different, you know, patients that would come in that would need, you know, translation services. And I just started wondering, where are these people coming from? Because I was in a pretty rural area in the state I was working in, and just started asking some of the patients, because some of the family members that are with the patients will speak a little bit of English, and I said, how did you get here from there? And they would just say, IOM. And I went home, Googled it, and it was International Organization for Migration that actually works with the United Nations, and they logistically move the refugees from whatever country to our country. So I really started looking into that and discovered amazing stuff going on that was not, there was no congressional oversight of this program and virtually no transparency for the past 35 years. And, you know, when a government gets a hold of something and you put it in a dark closet, it tends to grow and grow. And but anyway, it
does well in the dark.
Yes, yes. So I think it's very, very
like
much time to shine a light on it.
Like mushrooms.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
There's a saying that goes with that. We won't do that on the radio, but, you know, about mushrooms in the dark and you don't have to do anything. Just throw a little and they'll do fine.
Right, yeah. Right.
And that's kind of what we have going on this issue, isn't it?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And in South Carolina, we've had some issues with that. And Governor Haley has, at first she said no, then she said yes. And, I mean, it's been kind of hard to follow, hasn't it?
It is, and it's hard. I know there's a lot of states that are pushing back on this, but there's really not a whole lot they're able to do because of the federal, you know, overreach of this program, pretty much saying, you know, you will do this, you'll like it. And there's actually a suit, a lawsuit in your state that was filed by a resident, Brian Bilbro, and his attorney, Lauren Martell. And they actually have Obama listed as one of the defendants in the lawsuit, and that was just happened 2 days ago that he was added to it. But the gentleman, you know, wonderful family and children, and he's just concerned about his personal safety of his family and also economically, because when you bring these refugees in, they are 30 days from when they're here, they're eligible for all federal, state, and local welfare programs. So we are paying for them, number one, to get here. Then we pay for their housing. You wouldn't believe some when you go on some of the websites of the VOLAGs, and that's short for voluntary agencies that resettle these refugees. And when you go on some of their sites, for example, one of them is International Rescue Committee, and they give them free housing, furnished homes, food, help with rent, education. I mean, the list goes on and on. And I'm just like, wow, I'd love to get that for my kids. you know, or myself. But it's just amazing the money involved in this program. So about a $10 billion program annually. And it's just going to increase because Obama has increased that number of refugees by 10,000 extra in just this year. So, and then there's talk, apparently the United Nations High Commissioner is the one who recommends to us, refers 95% of who we take as refugees. And he's wanting us to take 480,000 Syrian refugees over the next several years, which is an astronomical number. And when you consider that, we're paying for them. And, you know, nobody's asking us if we want our tax dollars used for that, but yet that's what's happening because these volunteer agencies work on federal grants. Many of them are religiously based, you know, like Catholic Charities or Lutheran Services, but they cannot share any faith with these refugees. They're barred from doing so because they accept federal dollars.
So the only way you get around that is not to take any federal dollars.
Exactly. But it's a big money operation. The Chamber of Commerce is involved. Obviously, our government's involved, big corporations, and these volunteer agencies. And it's basically, it's moving groups of people that are seen as commodities for cheap labor. So it's definitely, I think about that, we have 93 million Americans out of work, and we are constantly bringing in, you know, people pouring over our border, taking the jobs, and then we're flying in refugees. And it makes no sense. You know, so much of what we're involved in, when you're looking at what our government is doing, makes no sense at all if you're trying to build a strong country. You know, so that's why I'm frustrated.
Yeah, you know, you and I and Kevin were actually talking about the effect of being a melting pot and being able to speak English and how that was kind of the glue that brought everything together. And then, of course, you know, we still want people to have their cultural differences because it's good to learn about
their culture. Absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. But we wanted that glue that was American and that we, and people used to be, here's the other thing, people used to be proud to be called an American.
Absolutely.
To become an American was a dream.
Yes, and I want to say people like me that are speaking out on this issue, I speak in Virginia and some other states about it, and I want to say right up front, I am not anti-immigrant, so don't call me a hater or a racist or whatever, because I am 100% behind any immigrant that wants to come to our country for the right reasons and for those reasons, like you say, they want to be an American, they want to enjoy our freedom of religion, our freedom of speech, capitalism, of what we've got left of those, because those are being attacked.
Sure.
And but you know, I think so. Most anybody that I come in contact with, they love those kind of immigrants, but not the ones that want to come here and take advantage of our welfare system, who want to actually look at changing our constitution to something like Sharia law, or you know the terrorists that are embedded within these refugee populations, which is that's you know a fact. And I think when we look at what's going on in Europe, they're struggling and coming to the brink of a civil war type scenarios over there because of the over immigration they've done. And I'm thinking, why can't we look and see what's going on and say, you know what, that's not a good path to be on.
Because everything is politically correct.
Exactly.
That's right.
And can I share, do I have a minute to share a story?
Absolutely.
I have this idea because I'm a nurse and your mom probably knows about Narcan. Narcan is an antidote or a reversal
sounds
drug.
Like narcotics or something here.
Well, it does have to do with narcotics.
Okay.
It's a reversal drug, for example, heroin. And heroin is huge in our country.
Yes.
I want to say up 400% in New York. So obviously with that, you're going to have an overdose, you know, increase in overdoses. So Narcan is a reversal drug. Police carry it. School nurses now have it. But if you've ever seen it used, when you mainline it, the person, and I've seen them come up off the table in seconds, so you need to have people right around. But I liken heroin overdose to what political correctness has done to our culture. And I think most Americans have been just sedated to the point that they're listless. They're not involved in fighting for our freedoms. And what we need is a shot of, basically, it's just truth. It is simple truth. It is facts that will wake Americans up and get them out of this political correct slumber that they've been in for years. And I think political correctness just crushes truth. Nobody wants to be out there telling, you know, the truth. And so that's why I'm involved and I'm doing what I'm doing.
Well, you know, I think when people do stand up, people do start to get the light. But you're right, people for too long have not stood up. And I think for too many years as people, I mean, I'm guilty of it many years ago, just saying, well, if the government's doing it, it must be the right thing.
You trusted them. You trusted them.
Exactly. And what we have found out is that, yeah, now when we stand up and say something, you get popped over the head and, you know, you
right. Get back in your cage.
I mean, I almost had an issue with the TSA. I mean, yesterday, I mean, I'm just going to be perfectly frank. Emerald was egging me on to say some stuff. And
Go for it.
Exactly, because I was like, we're going to miss a plane. And I'm saying stuff. And the lady looked at me and said, get back in that corner. Yeah, we're going to let these other people through first. I was just real.
Yeah.
And it is just totally frightening what is happening to our ability as humans. And I guess that's why Donald Trump is so appealing to people.
Right, because I believe he has broken the ceiling of political correctness. I think he did. He poked right through it, and I think it's emboldened a lot of people to speak out and say, you know what, I'm not the only one that thinks this way. So, yeah, I'm all about – he sounds like a great president. He would be a great president on the immigration issue.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's like I look at it, you know, this is great, and he's saying all this stuff. But what happens when he gets into office? And, you know, when we look at our politicians, some of our politicians, they started out so strong, and they weren't going to drink the water.
Right.
They weren't going to drink the water.
Term limits. You got to be in and out. You got to come in this place and out, because the longer you're here, we were talking about it earlier, you get affected by it. It must be in the air, or it's in the water.
Yes, we're only here for the weekend, and we're drinking bottled water.
Yeah.
So as you move forward here, what are you kind of looking at? I know you're nursing, you said, two nights, the weekend.
The weekend, I work, night shift, so that tops me out on how much money I can make doing it. So I'm just trying to pay my bills so that I have time to network with people, meet with legislators. I speak to groups like Oath Keepers and Tea Parties and Republican Women's Clubs and things like that, just trying to get, just truth, just educate. And then people should rise up. And actually, I think physically, this is going to take more than a phone call to your congressman. I mean, these congressmen passed omnibus bill, which funded all these crappy, excuse me, I can say that on the radio, right? These crappy programs. And they had the power to stop it. So I think we need to physically occupy Congress in their offices and not allow them to do anything else until immigration is addressed.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. You know what, Suzanne, I certainly appreciate the fact you came on here with us today. You are powerful.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I totally don't feel like it. I mean, this is not my comfort zone. And when I get up and speak, I say, look, I've had people belittle me saying, you don't have a master's, you don't have a doctorate in these certain issues. And I'm like, you know what? When others that do start getting up and speaking, I'll be glad to take a seat, because it isn't comfortable getting up in front of people.
Well, it isn't, and it's scary to get out there and to speak up, because you don't know what's going to happen to
you.
You know, what somebody's
going to you're a hater. You're a hater. You're a racist. You're all that, So.
And that's the thing. I think Kevin Jackson was talking about the politically correct joke. You always have to look. People always have to look over their shoulder before they talk about immigration and everything, because they're afraid what's going to be coming from behind them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So thanks so much for coming on, and keep
you.
Up the good work.
Thank you. We'll stay in touch.
All right. Sounds good. You are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. We'll be back. Don't you go away.
Lay away. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know layaway every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Right here, we're getting ready to talk. The sheriff is in town right here. The sheriff, a sheriff from Arizona, Sheriff Paul R. Babu,
yes.
Babu, okay. What nationality, what background is that?
It is actually French. I'm French, Italian, and Irish.
Well, by George, you've got a great combination to be a sheriff now, don't you?
Absolutely.
Now, how long have you been, and where are you actually a sheriff at?
Pinell County. So some of your listeners who watch Fox News may see me on the shaved head, bald sheriff from Arizona. And Pinal County is located geographically in between Phoenix and Tucson. We're larger than the state of Connecticut, 5,400 square miles, and we have about 420,000 residents who are my boss, who elect me as their top law enforcement leader.
Now, how many terms have you served as sheriff?
This is the completion of my second term, so 8 years. I was elected 9 years ago.
Okay. And so are you running for re-election?
No. I'm actually running for Congress.
You're running for Congress?
Yes, an open seat out in Arizona.
Okay. See, there's a double-edged sword that I didn't know about, folks. He's running for Congress.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, real quick, as far as the Congress, what are you, you have an open seat out there. Why did you decide to step up to Congress?
The problems that we've been facing in law enforcement are not solved. I could be a good sheriff for 20 years, and we're going to be back here talking on your radio program 8 years from now about the same issues. We have unsecured borders, a lack of enforcement of the law, putting those criminals and people from foreign countries first in front of American citizens, in front of our families. We take better care of refugees and asylum seekers and give them more money than we do our own retired senior citizens on Social Security or even our military veterans. I've served 20 years in the Army National Guard. I served a tour in Iraq as an Army officer, commanded up to 1,100 active duty soldiers and airmen in Yuma, Arizona, to help secure that portion of the border, and we did with our heroes in the Border Patrol. And yet we see time and time again that we're putting the interests of others before Americans. And this is no longer an issue about an unsecured border because of illegal immigration or the drug cartels that me and my deputies are fighting, and I'll talk about that later. This is about ISIS. This is about terrorism. And when the president of our country, Barack Obama, says that a graver national security concern than terrorism is global warming, I've got a problem with that. And this is why we're in the situation that we're in, because he doesn't see it as a big problem, and I do.
Well, just futuristically, you know, we've seen so many people come from other parts of the country and go to Congress, and then nothing happens. I just was talking to the lads earlier, and they were telling me how Congresswoman Sue, she has really helped with the immigration issue, but the drug issue is the one that they're dealing with on the border there even more than the illegals coming across.
Yes, Congresswoman McSally, next district over. I know the lads, and I'm friends with them. Well, my sheriff's office, and this is by intention, by plan, had the largest drug bust in the history of my state. $3 billion, that's with a B. This is not just marijuana. This is heroin. This is cocaine. This is methamphetamine. The largest importer into the whole United States of meth is Mexico. And nearly half of all these drugs coming into the country are coming through this part of Arizona. And so whatever we do or don't do affects the rest of the country. And so I could tell you that in that one day, this investigation took us 8 months, but we arrested 76 members of the Sinaloa cartel who think they own the place and carrying 108 weapons. And they weren't just handguns. They were scoped rifles. They were AK-47s. Two of them, in fact, we traced back to Fast and Furious.
Whoa.
That whole scandal from Eric Holder blaming American citizens and our Second Amendment freedom on all the guns going down to Mexico.
Right.
And lo and behold, it's them that have been giving it these weapons, 2,000 weapons in my state through straw purchasers to the very cartels that we're fighting. So I have a firsthand understanding in these accounts of what to bring to Washington as a lawman, as a military veteran. We used to have back 40-plus years ago, 71% of the members of Congress were military veterans or experienced.
Right. Yep.
Now it's only 14%, and it's getting smaller. And so I have a different perspective, and when I give my word and my oath, it means something a little bit differently to me than maybe to other people.
you know, this is going to be off the subject, but Emerald and I, and she's a millennial, we were having a discussion just about the fact about people don't understand what it is to go to war for our country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't understand World War II rationing and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And we just have an unrealistic view of the world, and if somebody had to go off and shoot a few guns in another country, it doesn't really affect us. And it is an amazing fact that we have forgotten about all
oh,
of
yeah.
that and where we would be going with this. And yet, if we don't do something about the drugs, if we don't do something about the terrorists, they are going to bring it here.
Clearly. And that's where very frustrating for me to watch the president sending 50 service members to Syria. We're going to defeat ISIS. And then he says, we're really, really going to defeat them, and he sends 250 more. And then you see time and time again here in our own country, whether they're homegrown or they're cells or people come from foreign
land.
Doesn't
really matter, does it?
Yeah, and we've got to have a more robust, aggressive approach to defeat the enemies of our country. And I tell you, we're not doing it now, and that's got to change.
Now, out of curiosity, when you made the biggest bust here, was the FBI, did you have any other organizations involved, or was this just your sheriff's office?
No, even that number came from the DEA, so it's not me making it up.
Okay.
You know, so we had other law enforcement partners at the local level, and we included other agencies, ICE namely, because of the technology and tracking of the cartel movement and activity, but we led this whole fight. And even recently, the last year and a half, 2 years, we have arrested 21 cartel scouts. And you might think, what is a scout?
Right.
These are the lookouts on mountaintops in my county. We're not even on the border. We're 70 miles north of the border. And these are members of the Sinaloa cartel, one on this mountaintop, one on that mountaintop, over a swath of 50-plus miles. And they communicate. Not just with cell phones, they communicate with encrypted radios that we cannot listen to. And their sole
Why can't
purpose.
You listen to them?
We don't even, my deputies don't even have encrypted radios.
Your deputies don't have encrypted
Correct.
Radios.
So they're listening literally on an iPhone, a smartphone, an app, listening to my deputies talk and where they're at and what calls they're on while they have secure communication. The cartels that we're fighting. And they have a solar panel.
Why is that? Why can't you have secure money? Well,
and this is still the problem. We don't have that money until next year. We're finally getting encrypted communications. It's all done, and I'm telling you, as a executive in law enforcement, that's not the case. But the concern here is that we're fighting a very organized enemy in this criminal syndicate. And to talk about cartel lookouts or scouts and their sole purpose is counterintelligence against us, law enforcement, to find out where the cops are at, hold up, don't bring the drugs right yet, hold up right there until we leave the area or the Border Patrol leaves the area. That's alarming, and it should be alarming to any of your listeners. This is almost like we're talking about some foreign country, and the response we get, because this is what we've been doing, local law enforcement. We're the guys that are supposed to answer 911 calls, right?
Right.
And run the jail. And yet we're doing this. The largest drug bust in the history of my state, all the illegals that I've just finished telling you about, and President Obama has put billboard signs in my county on federal land written in English warning American citizens that it's not safe to travel because of drug and human smuggling in certain parts of my county. That's his response.
Wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense here, does it?
No.
No?
No.
And what is the response?
So you asked me why I'm running for Congress?
Yeah. Well,
there you go.
I just have known, I've known so many, and over time it's like Washington is so big, it's so overblown that it can't control itself.
Yeah. We're at a point that we have to do something. There is no option. When we're at nearly $20 trillion in debt and we have unsecured border, a lack of enforcement of the law, all of these things. I'm a lawman. I cannot screw up. because people's safety, their lives are on the line, and yet every day we allow those here in Washington to screw up our country. And so is that idealism, or people that before they get into Congress, how they talk? Look, I'd get fired as a sheriff if I didn't perform. I've had an 8%, 9% budget cut. I have 40 positions that I can't fill just so I can make the budget, right? Why can't our federal government live that way, live within its means, set priorities fiscally, rebuild our military by cutting other areas,
sure,
right? And so this is common sense, and this is where this seat that I'm running for is currently held by a Democrat, and there's going to be a 180-degree opposite change on day one with me. And so voting for a balanced budget amendment, voting to put our security, our families, Americans first for once.
What kind of response are you getting in your state?
We're winning.
You're winning?
Yeah, by a large margin. And I'm not running against slouches. I'm running against the current Speaker of the House of my state, the former Secretary of State, a current state senator, a millionaire, a number of very prominent people, and we're at 40%. And my closest opponent's 11%. Because people want answers. People want solutions, and I'm a doer. And that's what I've been saying, is we've got to fix our country. And I will not be silenced. I will not be told to sit down, and I will speak and
stand up.
You
will not be whipped into shape?
No.
And whipped into vote for the right decision?
Right. And so we need to put our country and our interests first. And that's I swore oath to that. You know, I've had friends, people that I've known that have been killed in the military and the line of duty as law enforcement officers. And, what we stand for here in America is something special. And we can't allow this continual kicking the can down the field to occur, because what we're doing by not making these tough decisions about the budget is we are making decisions that we're just resigning ourselves to complete destruction. And I will not be a party to that. I will not resign myself that this can't be fixed, that you're just one of 435 members. I'd just be home in bed right now, and that covers would be pulled over my head, right?
Right.
I believe in our country, and I believe that we not just can, we must fix this. And I will grab people by the collar in order to do it.
Well, we've just recorded this whole conversation, Sheriff.
Great.
And I'm going to hold your feet to the fire.
Terrific.
And I hope you'll come back to see us, and
I'd
I wish
to.
You all the best in
you
winning
it.
Your state. Thank you so much
Thank
for
you.
Being with us here today.
All right. Thank you.
Right. This is WCRS. Thank you very much. That's going to do it for us. I'll be back at 4, and we're going to have more exciting fun. So don't you turn that dial. Stay right here on WCRS 98.5 and 1450 AM. Bye-bye, everybody.